Namaskar to everyone. Very nice to see everybody. Thank you for coming. How many of you are on vacation now? Is there a vacation at this moment going on? But it depends where you are, I suppose. If you're doing your PhDs and all, then there's no such thing as vacations. Huh? Okay. All right. Okay. I requested Bala not to have any introductions because most of you know me and I know most of you. And more important, the speaker is to introduce the topic. Speaker is not important. It is the topic that's very important. And this topic is a nice topic, which I actually very much wanted to share with you all, but we didn't have time earlier. It's a practical point for us to understand this effect of mantra. So the points that we're going to get from here that I'm going to share with you is actually basically from our Hindu scriptures, and that too the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavata Purana, as well as some of the famous Puranas from the Hindu scriptures. Why I'm telling you this is because it's very important when we speak anything to do with Vedic culture, religion, not to pluck any thoughts from the air. It's very important that we should not be whimsical about what we are presenting also. Just like if you were to make a statement, you should be able to back it up, either with your authority or authority of someone who is considered an authority. So that's why I have requested all along for all the series of lectures, I'm always very particular about putting down the references so that we know from the start. It is not that I am speaking about it, but it has been already spoken, and that I'm just being a sound piece or a mouthpiece to repeat what is in Shastras. There's one golden rule in all major religions. Anyone who speaks on any facet of spiritual life, all he or she has to do is to repeat what has already been stated. If you just repeat what has already been stated, then that is your potency. If you speculate, then it is coming from your mind, but it is not coming from authority. You may mix it with your experience, that is different. But from your experience, whatever that you practice and you read, they must correlate. Supposing I'm speaking to you all these things, and after that when we practically try it, and we find, no, it doesn't correlate, then you know for yourself that something is not correct. This is how we always check ourselves against what may be speculation and what is considered to be sastric. Today we're going to talk about mantra. We're going to talk about this concept of meditation and mantra meditation. And to do that, we're going to concentrate specifically on what mantra means, why the mantra is so powerful, and we'll take an example of a very powerful mantra that is recommended in Shastras, and then we'll take a short story from the Bhagavad Purana which gives us a nice example of the power and extent of this mantra, and then we can conclude and we can try one practical session. Just like in the few times we actually sang the mantra, today we can try to chant the mantra and see how it is. So it may be helpful, you know, who knows. I always say our meeting is not accident, it is arrangement. There must be a reason why you are seated here looking at me and I'm seated here smiling at you. There must be a reason. Okay. Now, the starting point to understand the power of mantra, because there's no point me talking to you about mantra if I can't convince you why mantra is important. If it's not important, I would be wasting your time. This is a very nice shloka from the Brihad Naradiya Purana. Hare Naam, Hare Naam, Hare Naam Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nasteva Nasteva, Nasteva Gatir Anyata. It's a spelling error. It should be N at the end, not K. The meaning to this is very nice. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, no other way, no other way. When When a scripture repeats a sentence three times, it is considered to be extremely important, hence the repetition. So you'll find in this verse, the author of the verse is actually speaking emphatically that the simplest way to connect yourself with peace, to deliver yourself from the difficulties of this world, is actually simply by the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. This is the point that is being put forward. What's interesting also is that this verse defines this age where we are living as an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Quarreling, I don't have to tell you. You know that even in the best of times, if you don't want to quarrel, somebody can quarrel with you. If you are blameless, someone can still pick a fight with you. It's very easy for them to do that. And you also know in your experience how small things in this world can become very large. I mean nothing and you mean nothing. I take what you say differently, you take what I say differently. And before you know it, I've become very sensitive. I've misunderstood you. You've become very sensitive. You misunderstand me. And before we know it, we are quarreling. That's why this age is known as Kali Yuga. It is also known as the age of quarrel, because that is our primary characteristic. You open the newspapers, and I don't have to tell you how many times you read bad news instead of good news. Try going through it. We are in the minority when we find good news. In fact, a newspaper sells if there's bad news, isn't it? You all know journalistic content, and you know that when there's sensational bad news, newspaper sells. Now, what about the word hypocrisy? The word hypocrisy is very important because it is linked directly with character. Quarrelsome persons, you can say, look, just tolerate them, it's all right. But when you say someone is hypocritical, then you find you have less tolerance for that. Why? Because it is innate in our character to actually be truthful. It is innate. We want the truth. But the problem is, because of the influence of this age, very often what we are and what we show is two different things. And when that happens, then the sastras tell us that is considered hypocritical. It is very hard today to be straightforward. If you want to be straightforward, you risk being misunderstood. You risk being eaten up in a corporate world. So many, many reasons are there why hypocrisy creeps into our lives. Whether it is good or bad, I leave it. But the point is, it is everywhere. You see it when you study. You see it in work. More in work than study, actually, if I may say so. And you see it in family. You see it in relationships. What is the way out of these two? That is what this verse is telling us. There is a way, and that's the meaning of the word deliverance. Deliverance doesn't just mean afterlife. Sometimes we are so caught up with afterlife that those who are living tell us, why are you so caught up with afterlife when the problems of life are not solved in the first place? A practical approach to living is not to speak about after death, but to speak about while we are still here and while we are still ticking. So this deliverance is not after death. This deliverance is now, when we are living. That is the key for us to remember. Before I go further, I have repeated before and I'll repeat it again. Mantra itself has a meaning. The word man means mind and tra means to control. So mantra is any chant, any sacred syllable, any name which can be chanted in such a way that when you chant it and you chant it well, with sincerity, with proper concentration, you will find that it actually makes you more peaceful. Cutting aside all religious sentiments, I think all of us just want a bit of peace in our hearts. Wouldn't hurt, would it, to have a bit of peace in our hearts? We all want that. It doesn't matter who we call ourselves, doesn't matter which part of India, which part of the world we come from. But if I ask anyone and you ask me the same question, what are you looking for? Definitely I'll tell you, I'm looking for happiness. And where do I find happiness? I find it when I'm peaceful. Peaceful. So that is where the sastras tell us, when you chant a mantra, if the mantra is effective, your mind must become calm. It may in the beginning be very restless, but But the mantra must have the effect of calming you down. It must have the effect of making you fixed in your peaceful situation. That's mantra. And there is only one place where this restless mind can be peaceful. It's actually when the mantra is being chanted. And the effects of the mantra long after you chant will continue to allow your mind to be stabilized. That is why this Hindu culture is very great. Long before mind management, mind mapping, solutions to problems in life came in terms of seminars in today's world, our rishis and our great yogis, they were already finding out ways to control our minds. Very advanced. I like this verse very much from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's important for us to remember this because in today's world, there are many ways to meditate, many ways to pray. Very often we find a lot of fire sacrifices go on. We all know yajnas. We also know that there is such a thing as meditation, sitting down, concentrating on an object, being silent. That is there also. That's a very powerful form of trying to still your mind. We also know that there are so many different ways in which different religions speak to us about how to connect with the Supreme. But this verse in Bhagavatam is interesting because here, actually, Shukadev Goswami, the speaker of Bhagavatam, he actually says that whatever result that you obtained in Satyayug, Satyayug was a time much longer than ours, much earlier than ours. Time in Indian cosmology is divided into four yugas. The first yuga is Satyayug. And during that time, people had more time, they were more inclined, and therefore they were more fixed on the form of just meditating with their minds. So at that time, meditation on Lord Vishnu was recommended. After Satyayuga, when Treta Yuga started, there was a lot of performances of yajnas. Today also, if you go to temples, there are a lot of performances of yajnas. But sometimes it's difficult for us to do yajnas at home every day. It takes at least a good half a day to prepare for a yajna, for those of you who know. So to do that on a daily basis can be quite tricky. And if you look at the list of items that you need for your yajnas, when you go for your fire sacrifices or you ask the priests and he gives you a long list, you know, and you go to Jyoti shop in Campbell Lane and try and get everything, you realize it's also quite expensive. And if you keep doing this every day, Shastras tell you, you'll go bankrupt before you reach the point of deliverance. Now, after Treta Yuga, there's one more yuga, and that's Dwapara Yuga. That's the yuga directly before our yuga. And that time, devotees could serve the Lord because they could directly see Him. But in Kali Yuga, all you and I can see are each other. And we can see the deities in the temple. But what do we do every day? You all are studying. Some of you stay on campus. You can't perform yajnas. You may want to try and meditate. But I guarantee you, in meditation, one problem is there. If you're exhausted, you sleep. And you may think that is very nice meditation. It is a meditation of sorts. But when you wake up, your problems remain. They don't run away, unfortunately. Unfortunately. So, in Kali Yuga, whatever results that you try to get before, the learned sages and the learned authorities, they tell us you can get it all by chanting. By chanting. And chanting is not only exclusive to the Vedic culture. If you go to see Muslims, you find that they also chant the thousand names of God. You see the Catholics, the Protestants, they have their rosaries, they have their chants, they have their Hail Marys. So chanting is something which has been going on for a long time. But we have not been so much exposed to it because of our lifestyle. This is another reason why mantra and meditation on mantra is very important. I wonder when you see this verse, whether it applies to us. Because the verse is supposed to apply to everyone who is born in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, men have short lives. Hardly we can reach 80 years. But in our sastras, they say in the earlier years, there was evidence that longevity was more pronounced. In this life, we are all quarrelsome. The possibility of us finding fault rather than praising someone is always greater. The possibility of us being more critical than to be more forgiving is also greater. Lazy. I don't think any one of you are lazy because otherwise you won't be here. Some of you may disagree and say you're last minute workers. But laziness means here laziness towards scriptures, laziness towards spiritual life. That's laziness. Materially, we are very hardworking because we are all used to seeing tangible results. You tell anyone to wait and see something intangible, they'll say, forget it. What I can't see, I don't want to work for. But you and I know as we grow older, there are many things in this world you can't see, but you can experience. And that requires patience. So that's why laziness is a problem for us. We may come and sit down, we may speak about these topics, but only each one of us know when we go back in the four corners of our rooms, whether we can actually act on it. It requires a bit of industry. Misguided. Misguided is very interesting. Can I tell you a short story of what misguided means in Shastras? One time, Lord Shiva was asked by Parvati Mata, Lord, you say that in Kali Yuga men are misguided. How would you explain that? So Lord Shiva said, I will take the form, right, of an ordinary human being and I will show you one pastime. So once there was a Brahmana in this village and he was rather poor. But being Brahmana, he ought to have more faith. But he was a bit hasty. He was praying very hard one day when he went to the market to purchase some fruits. He came across a watermelon that was being sold by a vendor. The vendor was actually Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva had actually put a single piece of gold coin in the center of this watermelon, right inside. And he just tied it all up and he said, Sir, I'm selling a watermelon. The Brahmana looks at the watermelon and says, This is good, how much is it? So he tells him a price. It's very cheap. Instead of eating it, why don't I sell it? I'll make more money out of it, isn't it? And then I'll buy two more watermelons. The vendor said, Sir, why don't you just use the watermelon for its natural function? What is that? Eat it. Why don't you just eat it? That's all right, isn't it? And don't worry, be satisfied. If you have faith in God, you live to another day and you lead for another day. But he said, No, I must be industrious here. So what does he do? He takes it, goes to the next market. And there he sells this watermelon to another man who doesn't know anything, picks it up, goes back home, cuts it up, wants to eat it and finds a gold coin. And this Brahmana misses out on the gold coin. And Shiva told Parvati Mata, he's misguided. This is the meaning of misguidance. You think about it, you draw your own conclusions. You think about it. And last, because we are misguided, we are unlucky. Second last, we are unlucky. How many of you always think you have the best of luck? I'm sure we all think, you think, you know, I have good luck, but only I know what bad luck I have. That's how we feel. But we are normally unlucky in this world. Have you always felt, you know, I'm in this queue and that queue is faster. I'm in that queue and this queue is faster. And you think it only happens to me. Kali Yuga, it happens to everyone. And each one feels it's only happening to me. And that's how we become more misguided. And last, always disturbed. Always disturbed. Very hard not to be disturbed. At this moment, no one is disturbed, I hope. Your faces don't show any disturbance. You're all smiling, nice smiles, so I'm quite happy now. If you all gave me long faces, I'll cut the lecture short and just walk out, you know. But you all don't, you're smiling now because the topic we are discussing is spiritual. So there's nothing in your hearts now and nothing really heavy on your mind. Nothing. And this is the effect. Even without chanting the mantra, just talking about mantra can bring you some measure of smile. I think that's a short victory in Kali Yuga. Otherwise, we are always disturbed. So this is another reason the Shastras tell us. Now, any sane man who wants to chant a mantra must first ask this question. Why must you chant? Why must we meditate? Why? The reasons are given by Shastras. One, mantra, this mantra that we speak about is non-different from the Supreme Lord. The Lord has invested all his energy into his name. Your name and my name, if you keep chanting my name for about 10 times, you get tired. Because by chanting my name, it doesn't mean I will appear before you. Doesn't mean I'll give you everything. You know, I may be at home in Badok and you will be here. If you chant my name, I'm not going to come here. You've got to call me on the phone. But the sastras tell us if you chant the names of the Lord, he appears immediately in your heart. He appears in the form of devotees who make you remember him. He appears in the form of maybe a picture or a deity. He appears in the form of food which is offered to him, which is known as prasad. These are all the different ways that the good Lord comes when we chant his names. If you chant Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola for the next 10 minutes, it doesn't mean your thirst is quenched. It also doesn't mean you have drunk Coca-Cola. But the sastras tell us if you chant the names of the Lord, it is as good as having gone to the temple to take his darshan. Very interesting concept. Why? Because that's the difference between the Supreme and the rest of us. That's why he's considered eternal. And that's why we are considered part of the eternal, but not up to that level of eternity. There are no hard fast rules to chanting his names. For me, that's the best part of the deal. Why? Because very often, rules and regulations bog us down. I'm not saying we must become mavericks, but I'm also saying that in this day and age, let's be practical. There are many mantras in the sastras, but you have to chant them in a very, very perfect way. You have to chant them at a certain time, at a certain place, in a certain way, right? You must be seated in a certain posture. You must pronounce them very well. How many of us are good with Sanskrit now? Very few. Very few. You know, and for those of us who know how to pronounce it, we may not know the meaning. We may know the meaning, we don't pronounce it properly. And sometimes we may be pronouncing it so well because we want to impress others and we don't want to remember the Lord. There are so many reasons and rules. But the beauty of chanting his names is that there are no rules. The only rule that is there is the verse that is given to you here. There may be discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras. There may be discrepancies in observing the regulative principles. There may be discrepancies in the time, the space, the place, the person, paraphernalia. But when your lordship, meaning when God's holy names are chanted, then the verdict of sastra is everything becomes faultless. It's very beautiful. Anu sankirtana tava. Sarva karoti nischidram. That means whatever discrepancies they go, they don't count. They don't count anymore. Why? Because it's the essence of the chanting that's important. Not the place, not the time. You can wake up in the morning, you can chant. Before you sleep, you can chant. If you're in trouble, please chant. If you're happy, please chant. If you're in difficulty, please chant. At all times, in all moments, you are free to chant. When the mind is running, make the mind run in chanting. Because it is still better than the mind running to worries and to anxieties. That's the rule of the thumb for mantra meditation. The holy name, they say, is blissful. When you chant the mantra, many devotees who chant mantras, they find that after a while, these mantra chanting and mantra meditation makes them very blissful, very peaceful. When you ask them, how is that so? Very often they tell you, I don't know. But they do tell you it works. Why is it that they may not know? Because there are many things in our lives that we can experience, but we cannot relate. If I were to tell you, Prabhu, please tell me now, how do you describe happiness? It's very difficult. How do you describe sadness? That's a bit easier, I think. No? You just see someone's face, you know he's not happy. But it's difficult to describe an emotion of bliss. Because bliss is from within. Happiness is dependent on external circumstances. When you chant the names of the Lord, the sastras tell us, you also become blissful because the Lord is blissful. Anyone gone to temples, seen the deity or the murti of Krishna, for example, not smiling? You won't. We have a saying, if Krishna did not smile, he'll be out of a job. Because who would want to turn to a God who doesn't smile? Who is not blissful? Because that is what we want. So naturally, we are attracted to bliss. The chanting bestows all spiritual benedictions. I use the word spiritual not because I'm using it, but because the sastras tell us that. Does it mean that if you come to chant and say, please, I want to get married, I'm going to chant, please get me married. Well, the holy name is so powerful that that whatever you want in your heart, it has the capacity to either fulfill it, or if not fulfill it, give you peace in accepting the fact that you cannot have it fulfilled. And that's a difficult thing to do. To get over something you want in this world is very hard. But you can do it by chanting. Many things in this world you and I want, we don't get. But if you chant, chanting doesn't guarantee you will get that material. But it guarantees that you will get over the material. And that's important. Because no matter how many material things you have in your life, chances are the happiness is still short-lived. Your best friend in your primary school days, 90% of us, is not your best friend today. He's history. You don't remember him. You have fond memories, but he's history. Like that, everything passes by us. Nothing stays except the chanting, except that which is spiritual. And the last three, they concern one point. And that is, as long as we chant and we meditate, then this mantra is so powerful that anything which is material in nature cannot affect our peace. It won't happen overnight, but it will happen gradually. The last point I want to share with you before we speak on the wonderful story of the holy name is this very nice verse from Bhagavatam. Sometimes people come and tell us, they say that, you know, you have to perform many yajnas before you come to a certain level. But the verse in Sastras tell us the exact opposite. This is spoken by Krishna himself in his incarnation as Kapila Dev, and he speaks to his mother Devahuti. And he tells her this, how glorious are they whose tongues are chanting your holy name. Even if they are born in the family of dog eaters, such persons can still be worshipped. Doesn't matter where you're born, how you're born, who you're born to. The persons who chant the holy names of the Lord, it is considered by Sastras that they have executed all kinds of austerities, all kinds of penances. They have performed all sacrifices. They have got all characteristics of civilized men. They have bathed at all the holy tirthas. They have gone to all the holy places. And they have fulfilled everything which is required just by chanting the names of the Lord. How wonderful it is, and how assuring it is. Because here we are, we all want peace, but we know we don't have the time to do half the things that we are supposed to do. So how do we do this? There is a nice story in this regard. Some of us know it, some of us may not, but it's still a very nice story. When I say story, in Bhagavatam, they are considered records of events. Not just mythical, but events, experiences. That's why they're very useful for us. How many of you have heard of the story of Ajamil? Hands up. Okay, that's fine. Ajamil is actually a Brahmana. He was born into a nice Brahmanical family. Very pious. Father, mother, very pious. When he was young, he worshipped Lord Narayana as his chosen Lord. He worshipped him in deity form, in Shila form. And as he grew up, he was doing all his austerities very nicely. He was also chanting the Lord's names. Eventually, he, in those days, of course, marriages were a lot earlier. His family found him a nice devotee girl, and they got married, and they were settling down. One day, Ajamil's father tells him to go out to the forest and gather some wood. So he goes out to gather some wood. And as he's coming back, he chances upon a sight which he has never seen. He sees a man and a woman embracing each other in public. Now in those days it was a big deal. Today, MRT stations, NUS, lecture theatres, it doesn't matter. You see it all the time. So for us, it's, what's the big deal? But at that time, never happened. But Ajamil saw this in front of him. He saw how the man and woman were embracing each other and how they were enjoying their physical embrace. Just at one moment. He went home and his mind was disturbed. because he got attracted to the lady who was actually embracing the man. He tried very hard, as far as possible, to remember the instructions of the sastras. He tried very hard to chant, and he tried to use his intelligence to control his desires. But his mind got the better of him, and eventually he lost all common sense. He eventually ran after this lady, who turned out to be a lady of society. And he abandoned his wife, and he brought this lady in first as a maid servant in the house. Eventually he upgraded her to wife, and he downgraded his wife to maid servant. So that was the occasion of his state of mind. At that point of time, he started spending his life completely with this lady. And because she was not devotional in nature naturally, and he was very anxious that she may leave him for another man, because that was how she was all that time, whatever material acquisitions he had, that which he didn't have also, he made sure he gave full enjoyment to her, and he forgot everyone and everything except to please her. As time went on, he completely forgot his life of chanting the names of the Lord, of praying to the Lord, of how he was in the beginning, because he was so caught up with the association of this lady. 88 years, the sastras tell us, passed by. He had 10 children, all from this lady. One child, the last child, was only a few years old. It gives you the idea of the extent of his sense enjoyment. Child was only a few years old, father is 88 years old. And the child's name was Narayana. He gave the child's name as Narayana. Every child has a name. So Ajamil named his child Narayana. Why did he do that? He did that because in his previous life, not last life, but the way he was before, he had already had some association with Narayana. So when he came to naming his child, he just gave the name Narayana. But he did not think of Lord Narayana at all. Instead, sastras tell us that he was very, very, very attached to his little boy. Those of you who have children, you will know that, you know, when they are very young, they are very attractive. I don't mean that when they are older, they are not. But yes, they do get to be a handful. But there's a certain age when they are awkward in their movements, you know, when you can carry them around, when they're all chubby and they don't know what they are saying. Everything they do is angelic, isn't it? They can do no wrong. They come and slap you on your face, you love it. You give your face to them and say, slap me again. 10 years later, they slap you, it's a different story. But anyway, that's the age that this boy, Narayana, was. And the sastras tell us, Ajamil loved him so much that he was very dear to the father. I'm quoting a verse in English, so you get the idea. Ajamil spent much time with his child and always called him lovingly, Narayana, Narayana, come here, come here. When Ajamil chewed the food and ate it, he called Narayana, come, you chew and eat. When he drank, child also, he made sure he was drinking, just like a father or mother would. And always engaged in taking care of the child, becoming so absorbed in the child, calling his name Narayana, Ajamil did not understand that his time was coming up. Time meaning he was getting old and death was upon him. So one day he lay on his deathbed. His time of death had arrived. And when it came, he began to feel very uneasy because body was leaving. It was going to go. So at that point of time, when you are uneasy, your natural instinct is to call out for your loved one. What did Ajamil do? He called out for his son. And sastras tell us his son was playing not too far away, nearby. So he looked at him and he called out, Narayana, Narayana, come, come. And at that point of time, the messengers of the Lord of Death, who is known as Yamaraj, his messengers are known as Yamadutas. Not very good to look beings. If you saw the starting point, and I think you'll come to the end also, they have quite ferocious looking faces. Not pleasant, if you want to end your life, to look at them. When they came, Ajamil could see them at the point of death. And at that point of time, he became bewildered and afraid. Due to his attachment for his child, He had no other cause. He just turned around to his child and started calling his name again. And with tears in his eyes, somehow or another, he chanted, Narayana, Narayana. And the moment he chanted, the Yamadutas had already thrown their noose around the neck of Ajamil. He was going to be dragged to answer to all his sinful activities in the presence of the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. But suddenly beautiful looking beings known as Vishnu Dutas, messengers from Lord Vishnu, they arrive. Now we've got a battle in our hands. They come. And what do? They immediately cut off the noose and they confront the Yamadutas and say, you know what? I think you've got the wrong man. Yamadutas say, you should see my record of his activities. They are so voluminous that I don't have enough pages to write. There is a record that is so long, it proves this man deserves to be punished for all his sinful acts. And what are sinful acts in Shastra? The definition of sin in Hinduism is very interesting. In Vedic scriptures, the definition of sin is forgetfulness of the Lord and your position with Him. That's all. Not the activity, but the mentality. That's the key. So now, the Vishnudutas argued no. They said, Ajamil has atoned for all his sins. Yamaduta said, no. He's not done anything good in his life. There's no way we can believe you. And Vishnudutta say, yes. He has done one thing right. What has he done? He chanted the name of God. He called out to Narayana. And you know how he called out to Narayana? He did not call out to Narayana with the idea of, Narayana, come and help me. Thank you. Let me go back to committing all the other sinful activities again. And Narayana, come back, help me again. He didn't have that mentality. He didn't commit sinful activities and then go do his atonement and come back and commit them again. He just didn't realize. Innocently, like a child calls out to his mother, a father called out to his son. But despite the fact that he wasn't even thinking of Narayana, Narayana accepted the chant. He consented to the effect of the holy name on the life of Ajamil, despite breaking all rules and not even remembering him per se, but just his name. Why? Because of the basic principle, the name is non-different from the form. So the Yamadutas have to be stopped. They go back to Yamaraj. The Vishnudutas succeed. And what do? They leave. Now amidst all this, Ajamil is in the center, hanging between life and death. He's not dead yet. Eh? Remember, the noose got cut. He hears all this conversation between the two messengers. And now he has a change of heart. Because now he realizes, 88 years of my life, or rather maybe 80 or 70 years of my life, I lived forgetting the Lord. But despite my forgetfulness of Him, He never forgot me. He gave me the chance somehow subconsciously to name my child Narayana. And at the time when I most, or rather least, remembered Him, He allowed that the name be taken into consideration favorably, and He allowed me to be saved from a miserable existence. So what does Ajamil do now? Now he says, I'm going to change my life. And because he changes his life, what happens to him? He gets another chance. He gets a second chance. And at that point of time, he actually turns around, chants the names of the Lord, this time with attention and feeling, and he goes back to Lord Vishnu. That's the story of Ajamil. It's a beautiful story because it means a lot. There are layers and layers and layers to the story. But for us, what is important is the key point of this. Why did he succeed in being freed from Yamaraj? The scriptures tell us because he chanted the name of the Lord without offense. There was nothing in his heart, nothing in his head when he chanted. He just chanted out of pure anxiety. And in that moment of anxiety, he chanted the name, the Lord accepted his chant. In Garuda Purana, it is very nicely stated that if you chant the holy names of the Lord, even in a helpless condition, even if you don't desire to do so, I like that. Even if you don't desire to chant, if you just chant it inadvertently, accidentally, forcibly, I don't know how that happens, but if you do that, the reactions of all the sinful activities, past karma, bad karma, they depart. Just like when a lion roars, all the small animals flee in fear. There is a link between activities which are considered sinful and activities which are considered peaceful. What is the difference and what is the link? You'll find one thing. When your behavior is all right in terms of your conscience, you sleep better. When you realize in your heart that your behavior was not right, no matter how much you deny to yourself, there is a voice behind your head that, if you want to hear, will actually sound you off and say, I'm not feeling very comfortable about this. What I'm trying to tell you is, mantra meditation is not in the air. It's not in the sky. There is a link between mantra meditation and our activities. There is a link between our behavior and how we take up mantra meditation. And ultimately, how we become peaceful in our hearts and our mind. If there was no link, that is why people get fed up of religions. Because they say very often, why should I go to temple? I know so many people who go to temple, they say, and once they're outside the temple, they're completely different. How am I to reconcile both? Real Vedic religion tells you, if there's no reconciliation, then that practice in the temple is hypocrisy. And it is a symptom of this age. That's why the chanting of the names of the Lord rises above religion. It doesn't matter what religion you belong to. Doesn't matter whether you have any kind of different belief to which you're born into. Doesn't matter what color you are. Doesn't matter where you're from. Chanting is for everyone. Because everyone has character. And everyone wants peace of mind. So like I told you, Ajamil gets a second chance. He achieved liberation from the cycle birth, cycled birth, and cycled death. And he found eternal service with the Lord. We may say sometimes, oh, by the way, yes, this is Ajamil. He's right in the center. He's an old man. You can see the beings on your right, not too handsome, very, very ugly looking, quite fearsome. Yamadutas out to drag him. And then you see these beautiful beings. They come in a haste and they stop and they say, please, you've got the wrong man. You've got the wrong man. What's our conclusion? The conclusion to this wonderful episode is that the mercy of the meditation on a mantra is boundless. If the good Lord can allow someone who chanted without actually wanting to chant, without meaning to chant, if he can give him peace of mind at the end of his life, then Shastras argue, think how much he would give you if you were to even try, make a sincere attempt. You may not be able to last the race, but you know why Ajamil also benefited? Because at the beginning of his life, he chanted the names of Narayana when he was young. And even though there was a point of his life when everything became just difficult and he lost track of his goodness, the goodness never left him. The names of the Lord never left his heart. Your stock of bhakti, devotion to the Lord, will always remain with you. All Shastras tell us that. If you're born in the next life, you don't carry your PhDs with you, unfortunately. I know all of you work very hard. But the bad news is, when you're born in your next life, you can't say, you're not born with a sign on you saying, I was PhD and I'm still PhD. Unfortunately, it won't be there. But what you have done previously for the good Lord, he remembers. And for that 6, 7, 10 years of his life, whatever innocence Ajamil had to chant the Lord's names, to pray to him, to try and lead a good life, it didn't go in vain. It held up in good stock as his behavior. And it finally manifested itself to save him at the point when it was needed most. That's the beauty of mantra. You may not know when the mantra will save you, but the time when it is supposed to be there, by the grace of God, it will manifest. But it will manifest when you try, as Ajamil tried in his earlier life, to do something in his connection with the Supreme. That is very important. I've given you a name here, Haridas Thakur. Anyone heard of him? Haridas Thakur is a very famous saintly personality, great devotee of the Lord from Bengal. Today it would be Bangladesh, but he was on that side. But the important thing is he is actually a Muslim by birth. But he chanted the names of the Lord regardless of his caste, creed, religion. He did not know much sastra. He was not very educated. Very often he was not allowed into the great temple of Puri in Jagannath in Puri. He was not allowed because he was actually a Muslim and they were quite orthodox about it. But what would he do? He would just sit in a hut and he would chant the names of the Lord, and from there he would see the spire of the temple from a distance and he would remember Lord Jagannath. And his chanting was so powerful that one day the governor of Bengal at that time, he actually sent someone to test the resolve of Haridas Thakur. This was just 500 years ago, recorded event. So this lady came in the dead of night. And she said, Haridas Thakur, I have come here to sit with you and spend some time with you. Ordinarily, any man's senses would be agitated in the presence of a woman in the darkness of a night when you are alone. What did Haridas Thakur say? My dear lady, if you have any desire, you please sit here. I have taken a vow to chant a number of names before I finish for the day. So I'm just going to chant the names. You please sit. You're more than welcome to stay. But after I finish my chanting, then I will satisfy you with whatever request you have come to ask me for. So Haridas Thakur sat and chanted. And by the time the night was over, he said, my dear lady, I'm ready now. Please tell me what I can do for you. But by then the lady felt a change in heart. And she said, never mind, I won't ask you anything today. I'll see you tomorrow. Second day she comes. And again Haridas Thakur tells her, I'm still chanting. In 1-2 hours I will finish. By the end of the 1-2 hours, when he does ask her, how can I help you, my lady? She declines to ask him again. On the third night, she is ready to immediately come earlier so that before he starts, she should be there. But when she comes, she finds that he's also chanting. And he tells her the same thing, wait for the third day. At the end of the third night, this lady falls at the feet of Haridas Thakur. And she says, I came here to change your mind, but you have changed mine. And not only have you changed my mind, but you have changed my heart. Just by hearing the chanting of the names, whatever desires I had, whatever ill intentions that I came on behalf of the ruler to spoil your name, has just gone in the wind. And today, I'm attracted to this chanting. So please, you teach me how to chant. And Haridas Thakur gave her the beads, he gave her the names, and he told her, now let this be the place where you sit and chant. And she sat there and she chanted. And she became a very great devotee of the Lord. This was sometime in the 14th, 15th century. But it's a very famous event. It shows us one thing, that the chanting of the holy name has a link with your behavior. And I think this is the most important point I want to share with everyone. Because for too long, religion has always had a disconnect between speaking and behavior, between preaching and behavior. What we speak must ultimately transform into what we are. If it doesn't, there's a serious problem in what we are trying to follow. This verse is very important. Trinarapi sunichena, tarorapi sahistuna, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sadaharihi. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. And one should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord. Now this verse is twofold. By chanting, you gain these characteristics. By gaining these characteristics, you are able to chant better. Both work with each other. Chanting will change our character. If really we are genuine about chanting, we will see a difference first in ourselves. Never mind the world. We always point at everyone else. But we forget when you point in front, three fingers point back at you. It is better to be self-introspective about our character first before we start playing the blame game and saying, others are not good, why should I be? And this verse connects mantra with behavior. If you want to chant continuously, because sometimes the question always comes up in such topics, how to chant continuously? My mind is disturbed. If you want to chant continuously, you must cultivate this behavior. You must be aware of how we are behaving. And at the same time, by chanting sincerely, your behavior naturally changes. No extraneous endeavor is needed, but sincere chanting is needed. Ajamil exhibited good behavior at the start of his life. Then he went on a spiral. But all was not lost. On the stock of his good behavior, he was pulled back at the right moment. Build up your stock of good behavior by building up your relationship with the Supreme. So I would end by making a few good points which I can share with you. The first, chanting is easy. It's free, thank God. No tax. Takes up very little time. 10 minutes a day is what we need. And it takes up very little energy. You're not expected to run up and down. You don't have to stand upside down on your head for the next 60,000 years of your life. And you don't have to be an expert in breathing. You just have to chant. And you have to chant sincerely. Sometimes devotees ask me, but I'm chanting this mantra, that mantra, and every other mantra. What should I do? We tell them very simple. If you have anything at this moment, and if you are hell-bent on chanting it, if you find it is working, then you just do one thing. Whatever you do at the start and the beginning, add this Maha Mantra at the start and end with this Maha Mantra at the end. Sastrically, it is said that we all have many zeros. You put 10 zeros and it still has no value as a number. All these zeros represent everything which is material. I have a car, I have a bag, you know, I have a laptop, I have my name, my fame, everything. But at the end of my life, they count for nothing. But Sastras tell us, if you just put the mantra in front, it is like one. Then when you put one and you put many zeros, suddenly all the zeros have value. On account of just one, nothing else. So we don't tell you to earth-shakingly change your lives. The Sastras just tell us to just start chanting. Why? Because the holy name, when you chant, literally means that you are asking God to always keep you in His service. And when you are in service of the Lord, then you are peaceful, you are satisfied. Can you be in service of the Lord if you are studying? If you are in the library? If you are working? Yes. Arjuna was told by Krishna, you work. But at the same time, you chant my names. How do you do that? Have you ever done something subconsciously? Have you heard of a good tune that you last heard in the radio and you like it so much? As you're doing your work, you're actually singing. You don't realize it, but you're singing. Have you ever been in a position where, you know, you like someone so much that you can't get you can't get the person out of your head? You're doing everything else in the world. You're doing all your duties and everything, but your mind is on that person. Sastras give us this very interesting example. They tell us the example of a man or a woman who is very expert in doing all his household duties, his relationship with his wife or husband, but actually he's having an affair. out there is someone whom he really loves. But you know what? He can't show it at home, otherwise he's finished. So what does he do? He becomes an even better husband, an even better wife. Why? Less suspicion. Right? If you're doing everything well, who would suspect? So he does everything perfectly. He does his duties very, very meticulously. But where is his mind? His mind is always on the object of his love. It's a crude example, but in Kali Yuga, it's useful. Because it gives us an idea of how we should elevate our mind on the platform of mantra to connect ourselves to the object of our true peace and true love, even while doing everything. Does it come overnight? No. Does it come with practice? Like everything else? Yes, it does. And this is the last of the last part of conclusion. Sincere chanting from the heart is the only qualification that's needed. Like a child calling for its mother. When a child calls for its mother, there's nothing in its heart except the mother. Of course, there may be 100 reasons why the child is calling for the mother. Children are very smart, you know, I realize that. They know which parent is very soft. They know which parent to bully. They know how to give that sad look which you fall for. But in their heart of hearts, they still are innocent. That is the innocence we may have lost as we have grown up in this world of hypocrisy, quarrel, misguidance, laziness. We may have lost it, but innately it is in us. It will revive when we chant. And the last point I can say, there is a description of the Lord in Shastras. He is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana. And what it means, he is one who takes the essence of your devotional attitude and not the result. He's not so much concerned with your result. How nice if all our lecturers were like that. If they could just mark our papers on the basis of our character and our dedication and not the result. But the truth of the matter in this world, you and I know, is your hard work doesn't always correspond to a correspondingly equal result. But in the Lord's mind, the result is not the issue. Result, he will accept based on your karma. The result is up to him to give you based on his mercy. But the attitude is yours to give. No one can change your attitude now unless you decide you want to. That's your freedom that he has given you. That's your exercise of free will. Anybody was caught by the collar by Bala to come down today? I hope not. Nobody. Every one of you came here for different reasons. But you came here on your volition, on your exercise of free will. Vedic scriptures tell us you can maintain that exercise of free will even as you chant the holy names. You just have to exercise it well and exercise it rightly. And the result of that, the symptom of that, peace. This is the concluding verse. Shukadev Goswami advises Parikshit Maharaj after speaking on the life of Ajamil. He says, "My dear king, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is able to uproot even the reactions of the greatest of sins. Therefore, the chanting of the Sankirtana movement, which is chanting, is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe." You remember the last 3-4 sessions we all sat down and we chanted together? That is Sankirtana. When you chant alone sometimes, it can be difficult. But in the presence of many like-minded devotees chanting together, the mantra becomes very powerful. Please try to understand this so that others will take it seriously. I like the last line, ladies and gentlemen, because this is the line that applies to all of us. If you take it seriously, your children one day will take this seriously. And the children after them. When you become parents, when you have children, the future of this culture becomes very important. You want them to be peaceful because it is in your heart. You want to share it with your loved ones. So the advice given here is that if you take it up seriously, others will. Because the best way To transmit a message is to live it. Not speak about it, but live it. If I sit down here and I'm academic about this discussion, then you and I will go back with our time wasted. But if I try not to be academic about it, if somehow or another it becomes something that touches your heart, then it has not wasted your time. Then it may at some point actually bring you peace. Then our relationship is genuine, because I've tried to serve you by repeating what I've heard. Otherwise, it's just an exercise in name and fame. I get all the applause, I go back, and I'm happy. That should not be the reason why I'm here. Spiritual life, if I may say so, must manifest in a change of heart. Doesn't have to be a change of complete heart overnight, but everything has to start somewhere. That's why I always say, we always need our daily appointment with the Supreme. Just like you have daily appointments, you know, with your mirror in the morning, huh? And you see how wonderful looking or how bad looking you are. Just like you have your daily appointments with your toothbrushes and your toothpaste and your shaving creams and whatever else. Just like you have your daily appointments with your lecturers and your tutors, whom you may or may not want to see. You have a choice to have a daily appointment with someone who created you. Someone whom you can't really define in terms of material existence, but you know in your heart is existing somewhere. And whom, if you touch, can actually give you life. Real life. And it can be done simply by chanting. You can chant while bathing. You can chant while you're crying. I know children who come for our classes on Bhagavad Gita, and we teach them this mantra, and when they are having the exams and they're very afraid that they're going to fail it, they chant. And when they come back, they tell their parents, you know, Mama or Papa, whatever, you know, today I was very afraid, but I remembered Krishna and I chanted his name, and now I'm very happy. And parents come and tell us, you know, this is so wonderful, because we find that our children are peaceful. And they know that there are difficulties in life, but they have something that they can use to counter that difficulty. Gives them peace. If children can take to it, then everyone can take to it. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Now we come to the more important part. Questions.